Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of From the Roots Up. I'm your host, Sean Frame. And in this episode, I decided to go back through all the episodes we aired in the second half of last year and catch you up to right where we are right now. I was trying to actually do like a single episode with great content and great clips from all the shows we did last year. You may have listened to that last week. And what I realized very quickly is if I provide enough detail for you to get what was going on in those shows, I really couldn't get through all of them. So I decided to do a second show with clips from the second half of the year. And that's what I'm giving you today. If you want to check out all the episodes, go on over to khi.com. That's khi.com under the audio on demand section. And you can see all the episodes we've aired in the last year and check them out. Listen to them in detail. You'll get all the great parts of the interview, some of the fun music clips we include, and everything else we do here on From the Roots Up. But here I give you this week's episode, in case you missed it, part two on From the Roots Up. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening. We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. In this episode, Dr. John P. Sullins and I discussed artificial intelligence and the ethics around that issue, and looked at just how real a Terminator scenario might be. This was the stuff of science fiction, but our topic today is actually the stuff of reality. And I'm hoping to talk with you today about AI, about computer learning, and just how that, you know, the ethics of it, I think, is a super interesting part of it, which I know is a big part of what you have focused on. And let's get into it. First of all, like, how did you go from being my, you know, a guy on the radio with me at San Jose State University way back when in the 80s to somebody who is now a philosophy professor focused on robotics and AI and all these issues?
Yeah, well, I think it has a lot to do with the forward-thinking philosophy department at San Jose State University.
I think a lot of people out in our listening audience, you know, have some vague notion of what AI is. They may have used some of the tools that are readily available online or even in some basic software applications. I mean, a lot of AI is now being built into some of the most basic tools that folks use every day, you know, whether it's word processing applications or spreadsheets or email applications. But really, I mean, how do you define the current sort of generation of AI, right? Like, what would be the defining characteristics of that? So when somebody encounters it, they go, oh, okay, I see this thing. And now I understand that that's something, there's this thing happening in the background called AI.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's so much now. AI is a term that refers to quite a number of different specific technologies, and they can be pretty non-exciting from somebody's outsider standpoint, and they can be extremely mystifying in other cases. I think what is greatly different now is the fact that we use machine learning techniques that are based on essentially, artificial neural nets and different, hundreds of different versions of those and ways of constructing them and programming them. But for instance, back when you and I were in college, that idea was out there, but it was not a favored idea. It was a background idea, and one that was had promise, but it wasn't the way that AI was done. Today, that has changed largely through the great success of being able to feed these machines the vast amounts of data that they need and power these machines the way that they needed to be powered. And when neural nets were first discovered, they were just very small and not super capable. And really what it took to make AI work was 20 years of us providing free labor.
She told me that her dad was loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have a rum and Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And in 30 seconds time, she said, I want to live like common people. I want to do whatever common people do. I want to sleep with common people. I want to sleep with common people like you. Well, what else could I do? I said, I'll see what I can do.
When you think of, what does GPT stand for? It's a generative pre-trained transformer. There's a lot in those words, right? So the first most important one is the generative one. That means that this machine doesn't just you ask it a question, it doesn't just go out and find the answer fully formed somewhere and then bring it back to you. That's what a Google search does, right? What a generative machine does is it's going to take information, just as you said, and it's going to do something with it, right? And so what's it going to do? That's what the next two letters tell us. So it's going to be pre-trained on this data, just like you said, and then it's going to transform that data into something new. And it can transform it into literally infinite number of different things. So if I want to say, draw me a picture of Abraham Lincoln in the form style of Maxfield Parrish, it's going to do a pretty great job at that. And it'll give me many, many different examples, and I can choose the one that I think best suits what I'm after. In the case of Maxfield Parrish, I mean, all that stuff's probably close to not copyright anymore. I think, it's a little over 100 years with that stuff. That's probably not going to be a big affront to anyone, but if we do it in the style of a more contemporary artist, then remember the Studio Ghibli photo filter that was popular recently? You can take any particular image and you can make it look as if it came out of, My Neighbor Totoro or any of the other popular films from that studio. So is that a copyright infringement? They didn't draw any of this. This isn't taken from any film. This is just in the style of those films. So do they own that particular way of drawing people or thinking about the world? This is a really new question. Are you challenging a copyright? I think you definitely are when you use one of their characters, right? You put one of their characters into something else, then you are challenging their copyright. But what if you're just challenging their copyright by the way you draw your background? And you're the character, right? Because you're doing it on your Instagram, Bill.
Right.
So it's just you as if you were in the My Neighbor Totoro world. is that a copyright infringement? You know, that's something we haven't had to deal with in the past. We are definitely going to. It reminds me of a lot of like Andy Warhol, right? Andy Warhol saw this coming, and
for sure,
and challenged us with his art, which was, you know, was it theft? Was it, you know, what's he doing? He's just basically copying, you know, stuff.
A Campbell's soup can, yeah.
Yeah, just putting a different kind of flavor to it, right? And a different kind of coloration to it. So those ideas that he was playing with in a artistic sort of way are now the reality of art, right? He was right. He was right. That's where art was headed. Whether we like it or not.
From the Roots Up is community radio that is sponsored by community businesses. If you'd like to join the growing list of folks who make this show possible, reach out to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at khi.com. From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Six Pack. Crack open some change and support the candidates and causes we need in these times. Paid for by The Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. Welcome back to From the Roots Up. In this episode, I interviewed Neva Parker, who's running for State Assembly District 5 here in California, about what it's like to be a candidate and why she feels more people ought to get involved in politics.
There's a supermajority of your party running in the legislature right now.
Yeah.
And A, why isn't it delivering the goods? Like, I look at the platform, I don't see a lot of that getting delivered, even though you have all the votes, ostensibly, and you have a governor who's in the same party.
Yeah.
And also, why should I care about putting one more person of your party in the same into an office? Boy, did I get asked that one. I was like, because it's me and I'm different, right?
Yes.
Like, I'm actually going to do what I say, unlike many people who don't. Mm-hmm. But what's your answer to that question? I mean, it was a tough one. First time I was asked that, I'm sure I turned beet red. But
yeah, I've been asked it a couple times. Well, more than a couple times. And I asked it of myself. Like, because when we turned into the supermajority, again, okay, so full disclosure, I was no party preference voter for a very long time. I leaned left, but, you know, if from my perspective, if you're representing your district or you're, you know, if this is something that makes sense, then why, what's the problem, right? So so when the legislature, I was a little scared because there's a temperance, like, you know, one party tempers the other. My answer to that question is, in our district is rural. So many people come in and say, you know, running for office and say, you know, do lip service to the rural areas and say, I'm going to, you know, yeah, I hear you, whatever, you know, and then do absolutely nothing when they get into office. We spoke a little bit earlier about how LA, large metropolitan area, had a huge representation in the legislature. Same thing for San Francisco in that area. That's going to be, whether it's Democrat or Republican, is still just by virtue of people is going to have a weight, right? So it takes away from the more rural areas to get what they need. Now, the argument, of course, has been, well, I'm the Democrat. I will at least have a seat at the table at this point. Maybe somebody will listen to me. Maybe I will be able to get something accomplished versus the Republican who's been, you know, probably very, well, in this case, very vocal about the administration, very vocal about their dislike of Democrats, you know, demonizing Democrats for the most part. You know, how much is that person going to get anything done at that point? So my answer to them is, if you want rule, if you want us to be represented, if you want us to get the needs that we need somebody who's going to have a seat at the table right from the get-go. My second argument to that is, yes, it might be fully Democrat, but that doesn't mean me as the Democrat who's just going to like bow down and kowtow to, you know, the governor and the party and say, yes, whatever you want me to do. I am allowed as an American to be critical of the party that I belong to and the other party and of my government. That is what we get to do. And that I can bring that to the legislature. Just because I'm a Democrat doesn't mean I'm going to bow down and do everything that they want me to do.
We've talked about a lot of things that most people would talk about in a candidate interview, but I want to do some things that I want to talk about things that people don't necessarily talk about in these kinds of political interviews. And really, look, I've run for office, higher office a couple times, and I held office for 9 years as a school board member in Placerville. And so I have my experience, you know, in doing that work. And, and some of it was in some of the very same places you're running right now. But I'm curious what your experience is like as a candidate. What is it like on the daily to run for office? Is it like what you see in the movies and TV? Like, is it like that at all?
Like, partially and no, not at all. When I started running, what happens a lot of times is people tell you, we got you. Like, we want you to run for office because they're looking for people to run for office. These offices are, you know, hard. It's not easy running for office. You're out there. You like who you are, like you better be firm in who you are and where your feet are standing because people will come at you. I had people coming at, like at events speaking, of course, they always have something to say about that. But I had people coming up talking about, you know, I'm glad you're wearing the proper undergarments kind of thing, you know, like that kind of stuff. Yes. And so I know, which I don't know as a man.
I never had that, Neva. I'm going to say that's 100% you, not me.
Yeah. As a woman, there's so many things. Like I'm just kind of interested at this, again, probably another podcast or another show, but like, you know, that could be another show, like male and female running for office. They're well-meaning. So I don't want to like,
of course,
you know, I mean, they're all people who want to see you succeed. So they want to give you advice and they want to help you. But you also have to be very clear about who you are, very thick skinned in terms of, again, you're going to have people coming and critiquing you. And for me, public speaking was the hardest part, still somewhat is, because I was a nonpartisan employee of a officer of the legislature who was a nonpartisan officer. So like we needed to keep our mouths shut, like opinion wise. We can help people and, you know, whatever, but you cannot have like can't sit there in the floor of the Senate and start talking, you know, politics or whatever. Like you just can't. So that's unethical. So I had a really hard time like getting out there and kind of expressing the things that I was feeling. So I got a lot of critiques and criticism for that. But ultimately when I started, you do get a lot of people who are telling you, we can help you. We'll be there for you. And then they're not. We need more voices. We need people who are away from, I guess, for lack of a better word, the machine, right? Who have experience in the world doing the work, running for office, because they bring something that is important, and that's real life experience. And that's just, you know, being a member of the community. So we need people with, you know, different backgrounds, with different experiences, different age ranges. We definitely need younger people. But we also, you know, we need them to run for office. So I think that's important.
If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with 2 shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club, there's always something happening. Our next episode of From the Roots Up gave the opportunity to hear what it means to be an activist and how a couple of the best organizers and activists I know got started and how they brought more people out to the street.
When you get out there and you bring a few people and you bring some signs and you start speaking truth to power, what does that do for just regular old folks in the community? And you know, why should they get out there and get involved with you? What's the, you know?
Well, my full first reason I felt to be out there on the streets is to educate people with the signs we were carrying, with the message we were having, to educate the general public. And my view of the general public has never been very positive. It's kind of gotten worse lately. And I still feel strongly that if somebody is motivated by something that they see in a positive way, or they learn something, or even we've had where they say they pulled over and say, I want to be part of your group. That is the ultimate in what we're doing. So I think the community aspect of it, the educational aspect of it, and the truth to power, you know, we have never over these years gotten much press at all. And I'm not that type. That's not my forte. I don't know the best way to do it. I don't know how to make it work, but we've gotten very little. So how it's grown has been word of mouth and my little Rat Pack email. Simple email, nothing more, no texting, no TikTok, no this, no that. It's just email.
There was one woman that told us, I got up this morning and I thought, I need to do something today. So she was out there with us for her first time.
Yeah, we've had so many people lately in the last year at different big rallies and small that say, this is my first time being here. We were on a trip recently, and I was talking to the couple of women who we spent more time with during this. It was a tour, and they listened, and they were in the same frame of mind of this anti-authoritarian what we're trying to do. And yesterday, one of those women showed up for the first time in her whole life ever to a protest. And we were doing Social Security support. We were 90 years of Social Security we celebrated yesterday. So she came to that, and she stood there that whole time and held her sign. She didn't make a sign herself, but she found one and she held it. And it was wonderful to have that feeling. And I think she really felt good herself to be there. She thanked me. And I said, you know, you'll get the information whenever you can show up, please do. And tell others. Yeah. So my motto now is each one bring one or a dozen.
Yeah. Look, I think what you're doing out there is giving people a place to be, a place to connect. And, you know, in the world we live in, that's a hard thing for people to do, right? There's just so much, you know, that we do that is solitary, right? Whether it's on our phone or whether it's just streaming, you know, movies or television series. And these are not social activities necessarily, right? So in addition to, you know, fighting the good fight against authoritarianism, which is no small thing, you're giving people a place to connect and be in a sense of community that we're all, I think, desperately needing and missing, right?
Absolutely. My first sign I made early on was build a unity community. And I take that to mean two people that don't know each other necessarily, or two people that are just a couple, but they have some kind of unification between them and among them. And but the community grows and grows. And we have one here in Roseville that started, not sure exactly how long ago, probably, I think it was either after the election or after the election, Common Grounds. And that was, to me, building a unity community. I mean, we were all on the same wavelength for what was happening and why we were there, but it brought more people together. And some of those folks have gotten involved with the Rat Pack, with other Dem clubs, with other actions. I mean, even things that some of the clubs are doing are social activism in a way of giving back, of working at the food bank, collecting things for schools and students, and that type of thing. So there's more to it than just the political part.
We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue, every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net. As someone who works in a unionized workplace, I wanted to take the next episode to interview someone who's really doing the work in labor. Fatima Garcia from LACLA, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. We talked about issues of labor and immigration and got her unique take on how we build power as workers.
You mentioned that, you know, forced migration was you know, part of the issue, right? Sort of wrapped up in this whole issue of labor. We're in some challenging times related to immigration, right? And how do you see what's going on right now in immigration in the United States intersecting with the labor movement and with the work that LACLA has done all these years?
It's very interesting because we have LACLA, at least Sacramento chapter, has been denouncing guest worker programs and forced migration for the last 20, 25 years. And we have had a very militant opposition on guest worker programs. And what we're seeing right now with this current administration is that what these corporations want is modern day slavery, right? We are having people be picked up from the Home Depots and being put in detention centers. Trump is calling this a mass deportation effort, but in reality, this is a mass detention effort. Majority of the people who are being picked up are being detained in these private detention centers and having to work for corporations like Walmart, McDonald's, these private ran detention centers that are being worked by the detainees. They're doing the cooking, they're doing the laundry, they're doing assembling the beds. You name it, they are actually forced to work in these detention centers under really horrible conditions. And so what we're seeing right now is a focus on more indentured servitude conditions of the workforce. And, you know, it's migrants are always the scapegoat, but you know, we should be prepared to see this across sectors, regardless of legal status in this country. This is just the first experiment that this administration is having with our workforce. And, you know, time and time again, it's the migrant labor workforce that ends up being the first experiment to these types of programs and conditions.
Yeah, it sounds like you've seen it the way I do, which is that, you know, these aren't deportations. When you're putting people in detention centers, and our Constitution has an exemption for slave labor practices for those who are imprisoned and incarcerated, right? It's then a straight line from arresting people who are workers to putting them in private prisons to turning them into a prison slave labor force, right? Like, is this really their game? It's the way I saw it. It was my nightmare scenario. But is this what you believe is happening?
Yes, it is. And I think the more people start to investigate and research, you're starting to see more articles and data that prove that is what's happening. And then, you know, I particularly pay attention to a lot of the politics in Mexico, and the numbers of deportations that Mexico is reporting are very low compared to the numbers and the quota that this Trump administration is saying of picking up at least 3,000 people a day to detain. And so when you look at the numbers of people being deported to their countries and the quota that the United States, and you compare them and you ask like, well, what's happening to people, right? And some people, we can't even find them in these detention centers. They disappear. So we're calling these workplace raids kidnapping of our people, of workers.
So that's a dark moment we're in right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Alcatraz Detention Center in Florida, Alligator Alcatraz, is definitely, I feel like it is a mock trial of the camps that you're explaining, right? The conditions there are horrible. They are like concentration camps. And again, we're seeing more data come out of workers working conditions and being forced to work. I mean, here in California, there has been strikes at detention centers that workers don't want to work under these conditions. And it's terrible because majority of the people who are being kidnapped are men. So we're talking about the providers of the families, right? We are talking about the protectors of our family unit. And what we're seeing is that these detention centers are all for profit. So if you want to reach out to your family, you're going to work for a dollar a day. So they're saying that they get paid a dollar a day. A call is $5. You're working 5 days a week for a dollar a day just to reach out to your family to let them know that you're okay. And so they're placed in these conditions where the material and the demand of wanting to stay in contact with your family, one, you know, the separation of families and the trauma that children of these mixed status or families without legal status in this country are going through right now force the men, these provider, these protectors to work under these conditions. It's like they have no choice, but some have been organizing in these detention centers, hunger strikes, other type of like images, like the SOS image that came out where detainees at the detention center were asking for help, pleading for help, right? We're seeing videos being leaked from these detention centers where the management of or Homeland Security is saying that these conditions are a lie, that these statements are a lie. And then we're seeing these videos being leaked from New York, for example, where there was 30 people in a cage. And so the more we create awareness and the more we build that solidarity with inmates, not just in these detention centers, but wrongly convicted in the prison, school to prison pipeline, I think, and talk about the labor, right? I feel like labor doesn't take on that issue as much, but talk about the exploitation of labor and of incarceration. So in isolation.
From the Roots Up is community radio that is sponsored by community businesses. If you'd like to join the growing list of folks who make this show possible, reach out to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at khi.com. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening. Welcome back to From the Roots Up. In our next Best Of clip, we discussed cuts to Medicaid, which is called Medi-Cal here in California. We also discussed disability rights and accessibility, including voting accessibility here in the United States. Natural disaster brought us together.
What are your feelings about what's going on with the system and the challenges it faces right now?
Yeah. What are my feelings about the challenges? Well, I have a thing or two to say about that. I'll start federally. That certainly H.R. 1, the budget reconciliation bill, boy, did that take aim at Medicaid. And the way that funding goes for IHSS, it starts as federal Medicaid dollars that then come to California. California's version of Medicaid is called Medi-Cal. And then IHSS is under the Medi-Cal umbrella. So we get the federal funding coming down through that, through the Medicaid stream. There's state funding, and then it's administered at the county level. So then there's also the county funding, which means you have three funding opportunities or also three funding hurdles. And so when H.R. 1 passed with the threats to Medicaid, that is, I'm trying to avoid saying deeply concerning, because that sanitizes it. It's terrifying to a lot of people and deeply angering, because it really feels like the message was, it doesn't matter whether or not you're alive or dead, because it cuts care for people. And I did a press conference with Congressman Mike Thompson in April about that bill, H.R. 1, and said that. And then he actually included that in a speech he gave in the House Ways and Means hearing on H.R. 1, and said, yeah, I have this constituent from Yolo County, and she's terrified by this. And what's more, what was he said? He's like, make no mistake about it. Without her Medicaid and Medicare, she will die. And what's more, she thinks that there are a lot of people in this Congress who would not care. And I'm just going to say thank you, Congressman Thompson, for carrying that message right into Congress, because it's absolutely true, and I am not alone in that. So that's kind of the perspective of what's happening on the federal front. There's so many threats with that. Where I think a lot of us were surprised this year was when Governor Newsom released his revised budget in May, what gets referred to as the May revise. And that really took aim at Medi-Cal and IHSS in a way that I don't know anybody's crystal ball that was showing that. And so some of the threats that we had to address was that it was going to reinstate an asset limit for Medi-Cal at $2,000. So anybody who had more than $2,000 was going to lose their Medi-Cal. And I'll just say that limit, that matches the most that anybody can have if you have SSI, Supplemental Security Income. That number hasn't gone up since 1989. And so he was going to reinstate the asset limit at $2,000. So that was going to wipe a lot of people off of their Medi-Cal. And since you have to have Medi-Cal to get IHSS, people were going to lose their IHSS. And since the asset limit had been taken away, some people had managed to save. And so then they were going to lose everything.
What do you do if you've accumulated a little bit of savings and now suddenly you can't have it? And if you do have it, you lose your Medi-Cal and your IHSS.
Right.
That's incredibly punitive and actually counterintuitive, by the way.
Right. And what makes it even worse is that in, there's a couple that are Noonie and Chrissy Mata, who are on the Yolo County IHSS Advisory Committee, both together. Noonie's a consumer. Chrissy's his provider. And so they were going to be a little over the asset limit. So Noonie was going to lose his IHSS, which would mean that Chrissy would lose her income because she's his provider. And you know, and as they told our state representatives, they would face homelessness. Because what do you do? And then, you know, and then Noonie would probably have to be institutionalized. Well, that's going to cost the state more money. I mean, if you're even just going to look at it in a cold-blooded financial way, in addition to taking somebody who's just an incredibly valuable part of the community and his family, and we're housing him.
So yeah, I don't understand the thought process there. I mean, first of all, as you said, it's just absolutely immoral, right? I don't know that you, when you know that your action you are taking is going to cause people to die, right. That's on your hands. That I don't know any other way to look at it. And if you can't see that, and you can't then also take just the cold-blooded financial look at it and go, this is the stupidest financial decision you could make, because either you will be institutionalizing people or lacking the ability to do that. Those folks are going to be on the street for whatever remaining period of time they have in this world. In every possible which way you could look at this, it is the wrong thing to do. And yet it is being done, and as you said, done by people who I think we would have trusted as allies prior to that. I am very shocked that our governor would be the one to put this kind of means testing, which is what they call it, which is like, really, $2,000? $2,000, like...
Right.
What?
Right, right.
Yeah. And, what is $2,000 in today's world? It is zero.
Because I receive Social Security disability income and SSI. So I have to stay under $2,000, which, you know, it's not like my income's real high. So, you know, it's like, I'll say SSI was designed to keep people who keep older adults and people with disabilities out of living in abject poverty. But because this limit it's an absolute limit, and again, hasn't gone up since 1989, so it's not chained to inflation or anything like this. So ironically, it enforces poverty. So
it does.
The number of times I've been in the state capitol testifying on bills in shoes that are held together with alligator clips. You know, it's like, you know, I can dress it up with my thrift store linen jacket on top, this sort of thing. But it's, you know what? The poverty's going to come through.
And I mean, I hear you laughing, but I can't laugh at that. That's horrific. Like that. Nobody should be treated that way in a society where we absolutely have the means to do this, to do the right thing because it's the right thing. There should be no further discussion beyond because it's the right thing.
This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue, every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento, or online at torchclub.net. We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by The Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. In our final In Case You Missed It clip, Tomas Evangelista and I discuss U.S. immigration policy on From the Roots Up.
And this I know, his teeth is white as snow.
In the past, there's been a quota system, and each country has an allocated number of immigrants that they can come in, they can immigrate into this country. And that is independent of very obvious things like geographical considerations. Like Mexico is our immediate neighbor. Canada is our immediate neighbor. The rational thing to say would be we probably should realistically allow more people from our immediate neighbors to come in than some people from, you know, a small country in another part of the world, right? You could balance that year for year, right? Like, there is a rational way to approach the number of people who come in and what kinds of visas they have. And, you know, are they coming in on a student visa? Are they coming in on a tourist visa for an extended stay? Are they coming in on some other kind of work visa? And there's a whole bunch of different kinds of those, right? Like, point being, like, the system we have is totally not rational. It punishes the people who live the closest. So, I mean, I remember that people were saying, oh, yeah, you know, I think it was Doris was told by a member of Congress, oh, why don't you just go back to your country and come back the right way? She's like, go back to a country where I haven't lived since I was a little tiny kid and wait 15 years.
Right.
Like you can say that. And maybe for those people who want to punish people for immigrating, that's a real satisfying answer. But like, that doesn't get at the problem, and it encourages people to find another way to enter, right? Right. If you treat people like that, the pressure is still there. Whatever it was that motivated people to come here in the first place, that doesn't go away. And so tell them in 15 years, go away and then come back, like, nobody's going to do that. I mean.
And I also think that there's this fairy tale story of like, well, my great, great grandparents did it the right way. I'm like,
oh, yeah.
You know, well, they just came and wrote their name on a book, you know, and
yeah.
I'm sure they had a tough journey as well, but like, it's not as it was today. And the right way has become overly complicated and taking so long and puts people in danger. So I think
unnecessarily so.
Right. Unnecessarily so. I think so.
But now we would be remiss if we didn't talk about what's going on now. And I think you and I both knew, you probably on a more visceral level than me, that when this administration came in, they were going to take an aggressive approach. Were you shocked by what happened? And are you shocked as to what's happening right up to this very moment with the way this administration is pursuing people who've come to this country?
It's worse than I had imagined, to be honest. I think, you know, here being in Auburn and Placer County, we don't see that in person. But if you've seen what's going on in the larger cities, ICE agents jumping out of trucks, just grabbing whoever, people being shot at that, you know, aren't putting that immigration officer's life in danger, just the violence and the lack of also a thorough background check of these immigration officers, some, you know, being criminals and actually people that may be racist or been a part of like
white supremacist groups.
Right. It's I can't even put it into words, because I think when you give those people this power over others, it's very difficult. It's I don't think it's right. And I think it's hard to describe, but I was really shocked, and it's getting worse. And the fact that recently there were comments made that the immigration system or the immigration officers aren't going far enough, you know, in apprehending people. I mean, I don't know what that means, but that is even scarier. And, you know, up until this point, I held back on speaking out publicly.
They're threatening citizens and, they're threatening people who have permanent residency here for the crime, quote, crime of speaking up. So, yeah, that's legitimate fear, right? Like, our president threatened to deport the guy who is now the elected mayor of New York City. Like, just think about, I mean, that to me, that's chilling. You think like, he's just joking. I don't know, man. I haven't seen the guy joke very much.
Like, right.
When he says something, aggressive like that, the people that he's put into place and maybe not particularly well background checked or maybe intentionally not background checked, they respond in kind. They do these things. The Supreme Court has now said that it is okay to profile people based on how they look and arrest first and ask questions later. And I just don't know many people who were citizens here who carry around the citizenship identification. Like, I don't walk around with a passport in the back of my pocket. It's easy for me as a white dude not to think about that, right?
Right.
But, I mean, if my skin were darker, I think I would feel compelled to do so, right? So that I could bring it out. But maybe you reach to bring it out and somebody just beats you down and then you're in jail or God knows where for, you know, a period of time. Like, it's really chilling to me.
It is, but I think it's done on purpose to make people fear and so that people don't stand up for others so that they think, okay, they're going to get that person. I'm okay. So then I won't speak up. And that, like, to me, like, I'm reminded that we all need to speak up. And that's why, you know, today and hopefully in other days, I'm able to speak to groups. And it's just to connect, to share my story so that they know what to do, so that they are, they're able to get also encouraged. Because some people, you know, we all live in these little bubbles and we feel like we don't know. And I think we just need to get to know each other more. Because I think that is building communities the way that we fight this back, that we help each other. Because if someone is taken, then we all need to stand up, we still have the First Amendment. And so we need to speak up, we need to show up, and we need to just make sure that nobody gets taken. So I'm working on other things. I'm hoping in the future we're able to provide some legal assistance to some families. Because that is the first line of defense. But I think it starts with me being out in public. And I am. I'm a permanent resident now, Sean. I have more protection than I did when I was little. But I hope to be a citizen soon. So, I mean, I want to use every right, every privilege that I gain as I go through my life to help others.
From the Roots Up is community radio that is sponsored by community businesses. If you'd like to join the growing list of folks who make this show possible, reach out to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at khi.com. Well, there you have it. You're all caught up, and I hope you're enjoying listening to these From the Roots Up episodes as much as I enjoyed making them. We've got some great new episodes planned, so check back in and take a listen. Whether you do it right here on KHI or over at khi.com in the audio on demand section, we want you here and we need you here. That's why we do this. I'm Sean Frame. I hope you'll join me every week as we delve into a topic like this, and I hope you'll engage me in a conversation. If you want to reach out to us, send an email to fromtherootsupshow@gmail.com.